Hi, I'm Scott Kessler of the Broadway Game, and on this episode of the Unnamed Philadelphia Union podcast, or Up and Up, I'm talking to former Major League Soccer player Jared Muntz. Jared, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
More than welcome. Thank you for giving us your time. So, Jared, you formerly were with Major League Soccer's Chicago Fire, and you ended up traveling through the different tiers of American soccer. But what are you up to today?
Today I am a full-time coach and an entrepreneur. We have three businesses, the Jared Muntz Soccer Podcast, OnlineSoccerAcademy.com, and CollegeRecruitingWebsite.com. And our core mission with all of those businesses is to teach athletes that if they believe in it and back that up with hard work, anything in life is possible.
So could you tell us more about your Online Soccer Academy? It's not exactly the most, it's not exactly a typical thing. Usually soccer academies are, face-to-face, constantly with coaches and, players at maybe like YSC with the Union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the Online Soccer Academy, we make better soccer players through easy-to-learn-from, free online training videos. And the idea behind it was that the majority of American youth soccer players are only training two times a week, unless they're a Union Academy player or a Chicago Fire Academy player in the high level like that. They're training two times a week, and if they want to make it to the next level, they need to train on their own outside of team training. And unfortunately, young players don't always know what to do. So that's what we wanted to help with. How do you train on your own? How do you train with a friend? So we provide a lot of backyard exercises, juggling tricks, new skills, speed of thought exercises, 30-minute practice sessions, all exercises that kids can do by themselves or with a friend in a backyard setting.
And how do you participate with the players themselves? Do you ever go out and have camps? Do you ever, interact with them one-on-one at any point?
Yeah, that's a good question. We love being online, but we also love being offline in the real world. Currently we have the Jared Muntz Pro Soccer Camps, which I started my first year as a pro back in late 2005. And we do local camps in Louisiana. There are plans in the next couple of years to come out with a big overnight camp that would be held in different locations around the country. And I also do private lessons just locally in my town in Mandeville. But for the Online Soccer Academy player in California, or Massachusetts, or Canada, or Norway, obviously we can't see them right now.
And something that you do through Online Soccer Academy is a lot of charity work, and the main one right now, as I understand it, is for Nothing But Nets, which you're doing a juggle-a-thon to raise money to buy anti-malaria mosquito nets for children in Africa?
Yeah, we're real excited about this. One of the things that my wife, she's our marketing director, she kind of had this thing that when anything good happens to our businesses, we should give a little donation to charity or do something cool like that. And one of the first nonprofits we donated to was Nothing But Nets, and I knew all about them from y'all's technical, the union's technical director, Diego Gutierrez, is a big member with them. And the OSA World Juggle-a-thon to benefit Nothing But Nets. And basically, on April 25th, 2011, World Malaria Day, soccer players, fans, and coaches everywhere will juggle to get better, juggle to save lives at 6 p.m. their standard time. And prior to that, they fundraise, they collect pledges, donations, they go for their juggling record on the 25th, and then afterwards they collect all their donations from their friends and family who donated, and they send it in to us at OnlineSoccerAcademy.com. The minimum is $30, and there'll be incentive-level prizes as well if you raise higher. And if you mail in at least $30, you get sent back a cool T-shirt, a little skillsies tag from one of our sponsors, and some other sponsor goodies. And then we take all the proceeds and donate it to Nothing But Nets. So we're super excited about this because, a lot of older players can juggle really well, and that's awesome. We want them to get high numbers in this event. But also for the younger players, they don't always know why juggling is important, and it's so important because it improves your touch and your skill and your concentration and just your overall confidence in the game. So for a young player that maybe they can only juggle 10 times, You know, if they work really hard and now they juggle 15 times for their record and they get, you know, $50 in donations, they now save 5 lives through their 15 juggles. And now that number doesn't look quite as small as it used to. So hopefully we're trying to help kids get better at soccer and then also do something great for a great cause like Nothing But Nets.
So you can find out more about this by going to www.onlinesocceracademy.com. And if anybody has any questions, can they contact you directly?
Yeah, they can contact me directly. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. They can email us. We're having a supporters group competition. So Section 8 Chicago, for example, called the OSA World Juggle-a-thon a no-brainer, and they're going to be hosting a OSA World Juggle-a-thon party. So we're reaching out to supporters groups like Sons of Ben, for example, to host an OSA World Juggle-a-thon party and try to raise a ton of money and juggle a bunch. And then we're going to have like a competition amongst MLS and other professional supporters groups on who can raise the most. And as long as at least 5 supporters groups participate in this competition, the highest fundraising supporters group will win a free live interview from Monk's TV, and I'll fly out to their facility and interview one of their players at like a local pub or a cool venue or something.
And now you mentioned Diego Gutierrez. You know a lot about this program through him. You played with him during your time with the Chicago Fire then?
Yeah. Diego and I were teammates in Chicago. I believe that was in 2006 when he transferred over there.
And what is he like as a person? Because for Philadelphia Union fans, we've seen his impact since he's come onto the Union as a scout and a scouting director with his with all the Colombians that the team's either been linked to or has brought into the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of laughing when I saw y'all signed all those Colombians. I'm like, I wonder who speaks really good Spanish and is from Colombia. Diego is a great guy. He's an awesome guy. He's a great teammate, a big leader in Chicago when I was there, someone I looked up to. Got a great family, very nice wife, good kids. He's an awesome guy. He's definitely a guy you want in your organization, whether that's on the coaching front or the front office side of things. But he's a very good guy, and, you know, I can't say enough good things about him.
You also played for a brief period of time with current Philadelphia Union player Justin Mapp. What was Justin like back 5 years, 5-6 years ago now when he was, what was he, about 20, 19, 20?
I don't know exactly his age, but yeah, he might have been around there. He was definitely 21 because we hung out at a bar once or twice. Yeah, I was teammates with him in 2005, 2006 in Chicago. And I mean, Justin's a good guy. He's a good friend. He's not always the most outspoken guy in the locker room, but he's a great player when he wants to be and when he turns his game on. And he's a good guy. He's a good friend of mine. Funny story, I'll tell you, Scott. We were out at training one day, and I usually, after training, like, juggle and work on some tricks and skills, Justin bet me $100 that I couldn't juggle all the way back from the training grounds to the locker room. So I took that bet, of course, because I was young and full of confidence. And so I made it all the way back through the fields, through the parking lot, up a couple steps, you know, over a little ditch. And I get to the entrance of the locker room, and I'm like, yes, I've made it. And Justin's like, no, you got to get inside the door. And I'm like, what? You're cheating, you know? And so I balanced the ball on my foot for a couple seconds, and my vision was all blurry because I've been juggling for a couple minutes. And as I was opening the door, I dropped the ball. So I kind of teased Justin that he still owes me $100. So tell your fans to tell him to pay me up.
Oh, man. Do you think that he's matured over the years now? Have you seen, like, even in his play, have you seen his play really progress onwards from when you were a teammate when he was younger?
I think his play has matured a little bit. I mean, he's been a pro for so long. I think he signed at 16 or 17 with DC, and it's matured. Justin's a player that I think, you know, if he really turned it up every single game, he could be an MLS All-Star every year. You know, and he turns it, everyone can see it. So hopefully he turns it up more for you guys this year, because he's definitely a really good player. But yeah, he's a mature guy.
And you've had some trials and tribulations throughout your life, especially with your through your soccer career. I believe that you had two different groin injuries that required major surgery and various other injuries that led to you retiring in 2009?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately for me, I developed a groin hip injury that they thought was a sports hernia when I was with the Fire in 2006. And I had sports hernia surgery, and it turns out I was misdiagnosed. And when I left the Fire, I was still injured, still wasn't feeling right, and playing through pain for about a year. Then finally got to another doctor and figured out what was wrong. It turns out I tore my labrum in my hip groin area, so I had to have another surgery. And unfortunately, after a lot of rehab and trying to come back, I just wasn't quite the same player anymore.
But despite that, between the first surgery and the second surgery, you played with three or four teams, which what was it like to play with, you know, a major injury without realizing it?
It was tough, Scott. It was really tough because, you know, you want to try to control what you can control, which is working hard and trying to get better and things like that. And those are always things I had control over. And, you know, my playing numbers don't quite show it, but, you know, I was getting better as a pro. I was, you know, being talked about as a starter. I was starting in Puerto Rico, you know, things like that. I controlled my game. My injury, I couldn't control, so it was really frustrating starting practice, like, okay, I'm all right. And then at the end of the practice, I felt like I was carrying my groin, limping off the field, and that was every day. And deep down, knowing that something is wrong with you, but there's not much you can do about it. None of the trainers can help you. Everyone's like, just ice it, just rest it, it'll get better. You know, it really limits your game. So mentally, that was a really tough time for me. Because you mentioned three or four teams, and, like, you know, I don't know how much, you know, but, like, I was signed with Virginia Beach, so I was there for 2 weeks, and then the team folded, and then I went to Vancouver for a couple weeks, you know, so that whole time, like, you know, I've got to be on my game proving myself to earn a contract. You know, I can't be sitting on the bench that I can't play or I have a slight injury. So for me, yeah, that was a really tough time because, you know, it felt like every day you were getting cut from the team because you knew you couldn't play, but you had to, and no one could tell you what was wrong with you.
The Virginia Beach Mariners, what level of competition were they? Were they NASL? Were they USL?
They were USL1, formerly the A-League, formerly the USFB2 League. I don't know what they call it now. It changes names every year. Yeah, they're the same league as Puerto Rico Islanders.
It's USL1. So what happened to them? Why did they fold after 2 weeks?
I don't know. Their owner, I forget his name. I wish I could remember it because we had a good joke for him, but he just pulled out. It was terrible. We got an email basically saying, that's it, team's folded, you know.
And that was right before the season was set to start?
Yeah, that was right before the season was set up. It was kind of at the start of preseason. So, yeah, we just, 1 week, the paychecks didn't come in, and I had just come from MLS, so I was like, I had no idea that a team could fold or, you know, paychecks wouldn't come in. So anyway, 1 week we didn't get paychecks, and then the next week we got an email saying, thanks anyway, this wasn't an inconvenience, but the team is folding.
And how'd you work your way into signing a deal with the Whitecaps? Did you go on a trial? Or?
Well, thankfully for me, I had done really well in Chicago, and the head coach in Miami right now, Daryl Shore, was a big backer of mine. Chris Armas was a supporter of mine. He was the Fire captain, and Dennis Hamlet. So I had some really good people backing me, and Colin Clark was the coach in Virginia at the time, and he was formerly with FC Dallas. He's a great coach.
So what caused you to leave Vancouver relatively quickly? It was only April to June, and then end up in Puerto Rico.
So things in Vancouver is a great city, great organization, but their head coach at the time, we didn't see eye to eye, and for whatever reason, it seemed like had it out against me. And, you know, I was doing all the little things right. You know, I've never had an attitude problem. I don't have an attitude problem. But for whatever reason, he just wasn't, you know, if he was trying to test me, I don't know what it was, but we didn't see eye to eye, and thankfully their front office was very nice. Bob Linarduzzi is one of their main guys up there, and he was great, and thankfully him and the head coach respected my decision and gave me permission to leave, and then I was able to sign with Puerto Rico.
And what's Puerto Rico like? The union currently, the union just released Christian Arrieta, who was an MVP defender for USL1 from Puerto Rico Islanders, and currently have Trinidad and Tobago star Keenan Daniel, who's also from Portland Islanders, on trial for the team. So what is Puerto Rico like? What are the fans like? And what is it like to play, you know, again, outside the United States for soccer?
Puerto Rico is great. Their head coach, Colin Clark, he is excellent. He's one of the big reasons for all the success that they're having in Puerto Rico. He's a great coach, great leader, great motivator, someone I really looked up to. I still look up to. The fans are great, especially when you start doing really well and you're getting closer to playoffs. That their stands fill up really quick and they're loud and passionate. Playing soccer outside the U.S. in Puerto Rico was cool. We were a couple of the soccer guys and I were living on these, you know, not the best apartments, but right on the beach, which was just really cool. And the lifestyle down there is real, real mellow. You know, people don't show up on time for things. So that was interesting with the bus trip we had once. But things in Puerto Rico are great. Fans are great. Soccer's good. And Colin Clark, the head coach, is excellent.
So after that, you ended up semi-retiring because of that groin hip injury. So what was it like as an athlete who, you know, you're making money off of what you do, soccer, and you know, having to think about retiring at, you know, in your mid-20s?
It was terrible. It was terrible when I finally made the decision to do it. I think I cried my eyes out for like a week. It was sad. It wasn't fun because, I think I can't remember how old I was, 26, 25. It was sad because, I mean, my whole life I wanted to be a professional soccer player. I worked so hard for it. I trained almost every day. I was in the gym. I was working on my skills. I was trying to meet the right people, trying to put myself in good spots. You know, I was fighting for every chance I ever got. And, you know, when I did get my chance, I backed it up and I took it. And then I reached a point in my career where I was finally getting opportunities. There was an MLS team that was interested in me. There was multiple USL1 teams interested in me. You know, things were going good, and I couldn't take my chance, which was really tough because I was injured. So, you know, to retire at such an early age because of a true injury that was preventing me from getting back to 100% was tough to deal with, but at the same time, it was out of my control. I'd given it everything I had. I'd worked hard. I'd sacrificed on and off the field to reach my dream, and I got to live it for a couple of years. And, you know, it was worth it. And you know, I can honestly say that it was out of my control when I was injured, and that's what stopped me from playing. Not that I wasn't good enough to continue on.
And what's it like to pen a retirement letter, because you put it up on your own personal blog, and obviously you weren't, you know, a David Beckham, and you weren't an Henri or a Donovan, so you weren't going to get ESPN coming after you on your retirement. But still, personally, what's it like to pen your own "I'm going away" letter?
It was sad. I think I cried through most of it. I almost want to tear up now. I cried through most of it. It was really sad. You know, I wasn't a big time player. You know, I didn't have a press conference or anything like that. I mean, I didn't need anything like that. It was just, I had a pretty big following from the people that come to our soccer camps and from online soccer academy players. And I just, you know, wanted to let everyone know what was going on and my reasons why and things like that. And, you know what, it was, once I did it, it was really nice. And the feedback from it, when it has been so positive. I mean, even today, people still read it, and it's nice that they get to know about me a little bit that way. And a lot of people commented on that blog and sent me personal emails, and that's one of my most viewed blog posts. So in that sense, it was, you know, nice to see how I've inspired other people, and people were just appreciative and wishing me luck in the next part of my life and congratulating me and things like that. So it was nice.
And now something that some people may wonder because of the recent signing of Zach Pfeffer to a homegrown player contract is, what's it like to be a developmental player in the MLS? Because that's the kind of contract that you signed with the Fire back in 2005. What's it like, you know, being young, going up against people that may be 15, 20 years older than you at that point, and trying to break your way into a team when, you know, you may not be physically ready to compete at that level?
Yeah, well, I would say, first off, you know, just financially, I would imagine Zach's contract is much different than my contract was.
There's speculation he's going to make about $40,000 as a you know, 16-year-old.
Yeah, that's great. That's way more than I was making. For me, I didn't care. I never played for any money. That was my dream, and I was living it. And you know, I made it happen. And so for me, I was 21, 22 signing as a pro. Zach 16 as a developmental contract. I mean, it didn't. I almost don't like that term because sometimes people look at it as like, oh, you weren't quite as good as everyone else, but you were. I mean, there's a lot of developmental players that were starting when the big-time player on the team who's making the most money was sitting on the bench. So it was just, in my opinion, a term that allowed MLS to pay people a lot less and expand the rosters, which I'm totally appreciative that they were able to do that because that's how I got in MLS, you know? As far as adjusting to the pro game, I mean, it's definitely much different, and it's so much faster, and you just have to be thinking so much quicker than you do at college or at the youth level. So, I mean, Zach, for example, I mean, he's 16, so he hasn't even played in college, but I believe he's, you know, trained with the pro team for a while. He appeared in a game or so, and I would imagine, you know, he's probably ready to make that adjustment, and he will over time. But the thing is, it's such an exciting time to be a youth player in America with big dreams because now you can sign pro at 16, 17, 15, 18, and it's so much better for them to be in that pro environment versus, you know, a youth soccer club or a college team, you know, in the true sense of being a professional.
Well, thank you for your time, Jared, and I'll be sure to have you on the show again at some point. For now, good luck with Nothing But Nets, and we'll check in more with that at some point, possibly do something through the Brotherly Game to help you out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. We'd love it if the Brotherly Game would cover it, and maybe you guys can set up a OSA World Juggle-a-thon party.
If only. I wish I could juggle at all.
Yeah, even if you can't juggle, just send in $30 and get a T-shirt and make a donation.
Thanks for your time, Jared, and we'll be talking to you a lot on Twitter and through your site.
All right, sounds great, Scott. Thank you very much.